I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 31 of Season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Niall McGowan of The Bat Minute. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, wait a minute here. I don't have your guest spot here. It's at Rob's house, and it's in John's house, and it's in 100 houses all over this town.
That's great.
I'm hoping that landed as a Jimmy Stewart.
Yes, it did. It did. That was a great impression. Nicely done. Nicely done. Yes. I thought I was actually talking to him, even though these are minutes that are going to happen, in a few weeks from now, what you're talking about, but still, that's good, because I don't know if this week there really is anything you could have said that would have been that would have sounded like a good Jimmy Stewart
laying into you, but been like,
yeah,
exactly. You think these people don't have anything better to do than to come on, but I do.
Exactly.
A rant at you in the middle of the show.
That's great. All right, so minute 31 begins with the chairman wishing George well, and ends with Billy retorting to Potter's comment. So basically, we had a very sad week last week. Last week, Paul Bailey had a stroke and died, and we ended the week with we get to see George and Billy in this conference room with the whole group of people on the board. And, they basically we continue with that conversation today, where the chairman is shaking George's hand and says, good luck to you. It's a duel, George. And then you hear two people in the crowd go, good luck, George. Goodbye, George. And, I looked around, and it's really interesting because, first of all, the room that they're in is very crowded. It does not look like this is meant to be a room for – this is not a conference room.
No. Well, I guess it makes sense, though, with the building alone. It's just like, yeah, it's not built for – everything about it is small. Like, it's not supposed to be a big operation. It's supposed to be the underdog, the perpetual underdog. So, yeah, it's not even equipped to have a en masse meeting. Like, it's only really just like, you can have a meeting of about, like, four people.
Right.
Yeah. Well, why would you ever need a meeting with more than four people? I guess, right. Paul Bailey just never thought that this would have. I guess it didn't occur in his lifetime. So
do you think this is Paul Bailey's office?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so. I also believe it's very it's typical and very gutsy, and it's quite frankly a little rude that, like, I believe this is his office, and Potter has basically taken what seems to be the primo seat. Like, that seems like that's where the office holder would sit.
That's his wheelchair. He's in a wheelchair there.
Oh, no, it's not so much the actual chair that he's in. It's the positioning in the office. It's kind of has the vibe of like where he's facing. That would be like, oh, if you were here professionally, this is where you'd put your chair. Like, like you ran the place, basically. I think in his mind, it's kind of like, well, I am going to be running this place. So, yeah, you would put me where Pa Bailey would have sat. Which is a bit presumptuous because he's supposed to be a guest on the premises,
Right. It's true. Did you notice that there's a picture of Paul Bailey on the wall there?
I did, yeah. It's so, like, it's one of those old-fashioned portraits that, like, I don't know if people do that anymore, where it's kind of like movie, like, it looks more like this is a headshot.
Correct.
An old-timey headshot of the actor rather than, like, now that people just do, like, a proper, like, little smile to camera and stuff, but like, I almost miss those kind of, like, very sweeping romantic portraits that people will do where they just look very dynamic and they're doing like a very pensive pose, staring off into something way off in the distance that we never see. But I noticed and appreciated Paul Bailey's is a picture there.
I mean, we'll find out over the course of this week. I think David mentioned it today. You know that it's been 3 months. Yeah, they mentioned later today that he's been dead for 3 months. So I mean, first of all, that on the one hand that's a long time. On the other hand, that's a very short time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because it's a long time for them to be debating or discussing what they're going to do with the building and loan. You know, you have the person who's been running the place, I guess, relatively quite well over the years, and we will find out also over the course of this week how long they've had the building and loan. But what's very interesting here is that, you know, George has taken off the summer. I mean, again, we'll get into the dialogue, which will explain all these things anyway. But basically, George has foregone his vacation or his trip around the world before college, and he decided that he is, you know, he's there to settle things at the building alone, which makes sense because he was there beforehand. You know, he was working there while they were waiting to get in. You know, so it makes sense.
I would say too, like, well, I would imagine what happened too, like, you know, saying about 3 months being a long time or a short time. I can imagine there's unseen scenes of like Potter and like a couple of more business minded people wanting to get this done with it like, way before now.
Right.
But it being like another clash with the Bailey kind of and the small town mentality of like, no, you have to like mourn this guy. Like you leave the family alone for a little bit. You give them time until they want to come back.
Right.
And then Potter been like, what do you mean I have to wait? It's like, he's dead. Just get on with it, guys.
That's right.
I think probably like literally like 3 days later, he probably wanted to get like probably the day of was like, oh, okay, well, what are we going to do with this?
We do know that Potter got into an argument with Peter Bailey on that day. So, you know, there is speculation that the way that Potter agitated him actually might have caused him to have his stroke.
Yes, yes, I wholeheartedly believe that.
Yeah. Again, there's no proof of that or anything like that. Once again, I mean, I've mentioned this a few times already, but it's very interesting that the building and loan is on the second floor, and somehow Potter is magically able to get up onto the second floor in a wheelchair. You know, so it goes back to the whole theory that he is somehow related to Harry Potter and has some sort of magic and is able to float up or something like that.
Because I was going to say, he's like, as Dalek technology. It's just like, you thought the one thing that could defeat him was going up the stairs. But no, he actually turns out the chair has like rockets in it. And he just goes up or something. He's been part Dalek the whole time.
That's true.
He's here to exterminate the buildings alone. That's his whole mission.
Right. I mean, I've mentioned this also numerous times that, you know, maybe, you know, Potter isn't really in a wheelchair. And like, he gets the wheelchair to the bottom of the stairs, looks around, nobody's looking, takes off the blanket, walks up, runs up the stairs. His man brings up the wheelchair. They sit it down. He sits back on, puts the blanket over his feet again, over his legs again. And that's it, you know, so.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me with them either, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But it's, I also imagine too, though, there could have been a thing of like, you know, because it's such a small town, they were like, well, we need to put in, you know, like a ramp for, you know, one of the, you know, the differently able to get up here. And then, like, there's been a debate amongst the Baileys of, like, well, the only person in a wheelchair in the whole town
is Potter, and we don't want him there.
Is Potter. And then they have the kind of thing of, like, do we just not bother? Because we don't really want him up here. But, like, nah, we better make one just, like, maybe it's a... I would say, like, nowadays that would be, like, a building code thing. It's like, oh, you'd have to have, you know, like, an accessibility ramp. But back in the, you know, this isn't even, like, the 30s at this point.
This is 1928. It's... You know, right now we're talking 95 years ago.
Yeah, so they're probably like, oh, back then, like, no, you do whatever the hell you want.
That's right.
There's no building regulations. The gut doesn't exist yet.
Right. So what I did was is I also looked up in IMDb. There are five people listed in IMDb uncredited as the board members. Okay, because I was wondering who are these character actors that they have here. I'm going to quickly go through them because none of them really have so much about them, but there's some interesting stuff that I found. So one of them is a guy named Larry Wheat, who was born in 1876 and died in 1963 at the age of 86. He has 128 IMDb credits.
Oh,
okay.
Let's say back in the day, though, it was just like, yeah, all working actors is like, oh, if you're in less than like 200 things,
that's like, right.
You're not doing it right.
Whatever. Like, just wait. Right now, we say 128. Remember that number because we're going to see some of these other people, how many uncredited roles some of these people have in movies. It's unbelievable. But the most interesting trivia tidbit that I found about Larry Wheat is that he was a member of the Maskers Club. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Maskers Club was a private social club for actors in L.A., and they created it in 1925. And it was created by a whole bunch of New York actors who left Broadway in order to be in movies. And the club itself even produced 13 short movies. And but the most interesting thing about the Maskers Club is that in 1957, there was an actor named Raymond Griffith who actually died there.
Oh.
Okay. He, you know, I mean, it was a club, so they had meals and stuff like that. He actually choked to death while he was, you know, he choked to death on I think like a rib steak or something like that. Yeah. He was 62 and this happened on November 25th, 1957, and basically the newspapers after he died said that he died of a heart attack, and then when they did an autopsy, they revealed that he actually died of asphyxia. So he basically choked.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
The thing is, though, because old Hollywood, like, again, unregulated old Hollywood.
That's right.
It's like you seeing these bunch of guys had a club, and then somebody wound up dead in it. I'm like, and they choked, did they? He's like, yeah, I'm sure probably someone choked him. And then they're like, okay, we got to cover this up.
Exactly. It's very possible. Yeah. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on in the 20s, 30s and 40s in all of the, in the Hollywood scene and stuff like that.
I was literally just reading the other day. I had no idea. Apparently, like, it's sort of basic common knowledge that Betty Davis, like, killed her second husband. And it was just like Warner Brothers were like, yeah, make that go away. Like, this is like, or her second husband showed up and was like, oh, he's got like a cracked, like his head's been cracked open.
Like, yeah, he vaguely recall something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sustained an injury. And then Betty Davis was like, oh, yeah, he fell down the stairs like a couple of weeks ago. And they're like, no, it happened much more recently than that. And she's like, well, I don't know much about that. It's like, it kind of became a thing then of people like, it seems like she probably cracked him over the head with something. And then he died later. And then the studios just made that go away because you could do that back in the day.
Right.
True.
And okay, so that's the first guy. I don't know which one he is. He could be any of the people sitting around the table because, you know, if any of them have any lines, they're throwaway lines. They don't really have that much to say. You know, good luck, George, things like that.
Yeah.
The next one is Milton Kibbe, born in 1896, died in 1970 at the age of 74, which basically means that when this movie came out, he was about 50 years old. He has 392 IMDb credits.
Woo! I said back in the now people can't break into the movie business for love nor money.
That's right.
But back then it was like, yeah, he just was like, oh, you want to be in a movie, you want to be in five movies today? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, I mean that number is just astounding. It's 400, it's almost 400 IMDb credits. Most people, you know, if they're lucky, they have like 20 or 25, you know, that's it.
I guess it could have been like genuinely might have been a thing of like, I guess it might have been like a working, like not an extra, because I guess he would have spoken lines if he got like proper credit for it, but like,
right,
he could have been. It's like, yeah, really on a lot, just like, okay, so can you be down here in an hour? Yeah, I just wanted to say your line. Okay, oh no, we need you up here now to do this one. It's like, you know, it's 20 minutes away. Okay, yeah, just, you know, get in the little cart and go down there.
That's right.
And there you go. You got a guy.
And his most famous thing is that he is the brother of an actor named Guy Kibbe, who was in Captain Blood. He was in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. He's a much more prolific actor, but, you know, he has only 114 IMDb credits. So, you know, his brother Milton now crowns him by that one.
Must have been some pretty unpleasant dinners around that asshole.
That's right.
It's like how many movies you been in this year? Oh, 35. I've been in 87.
That's right. Then the next two, I wasn't able to find out if they're related, but my assumption is they are. One of them's name is Art Howard, and the other one's name is Burt Howard.
The alphabetically named children of the Howard family.
That's exactly right. So the thing is that
Cart Howard was the other one. Dart came along.
That's then. Right.
E-Art.
and Bert only has 14 IMDb credits. So, you know, he must have had a real job at the time. And Art had 50, which includes he was in Vertigo, Witness to the Prosecution, The President Vanishes. So, you know, he was in some pretty big movies also. And then the final one that I found is a man named Edward Clark, who has 163 IMDb credits, including East of Eden and Strangers on the Train.
Yeah, not too shabby at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do kind of like the mental image now, though, of these jobbing actors like running from set to set to do like little bit parts and like them filming the scene and a guy been there in like a cowboy outfit too, just didn't have time to get changed between movies.
That's right. Go put on that suit. It's like, you're in a board meeting.
This is like sitting there like old, like fake blood smeared over his face and stuff. Like, for love of God, get someone in here to wipe that off.
That's right.
It's like, I got a gun smoke in like 5 minutes here. Can we hurry this along? Otherwise, Gunsmoke wouldn't have been going at this point, I guess. I have no idea when Gunsmoke. I just know that it lasted forever. So
I think Gunsmoke started in the 50s, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So it wasn't on yet, but it's getting there. It's getting there.
You won't imagine living in a time without Gunsmoke. Like, you know, it's like one of those things, life before Star Wars and life after Star Wars.
That's right.
Everyone in this room right now doesn't even know what Gunsmoke is. Like, what kind of a world? What kind of a universe is that to be in?
Well, they didn't know what Star Wars is either.
Yeah, that's true.
and most of them didn't live to actually of all these five people that I mentioned, not a single one of them made it to 1977. So no, none of them. None of them ever found out what Star Wars is.
Jimmy
Stewart did, but I'm just talking about these five, uncredited board members. None of them made it.
When he got into the afterlife, he was going like, oh, fellas, you missed the most amazing movie that ever came out. But it was nothing compared to this Gunsmoke show, let me tell you.
Or It's a Wonderful Life.
Like, we were there for Gunsmoke, Jimmy. We saw that. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So then the chairman continues and speaks and says, and now we come to the real purpose of this meeting, to appoint a successor to our dear friend, Peter Bailey. So it's funny that he talks about the fact that now we're here at the real purpose. So what's the fake purpose? Yeah.
I guess maybe this had a load of fine print and the technicalities to go over with. And then this more kind of like the big thing in the room is this. Everything else is just sort of like nickel and dime, kind of like, yeah, it's a little matter getting this over with and that over with. But now here's the big thing that we're all waiting to talk about, kind of thing.
The big thing we're all waiting to talk about is finally, it's funny that they haven't thought about the fact over the last few months. You know, they've had 3 months, so that should be sufficient time to really think about who do we want to replace Peter in his job. And everyone there knows that, you know, George is not an option. George is just staying there just for the time being.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, though. My one thing against George Bailey as a character, and I guess the movie's end, I guess, he changes his tune. But he's obviously a very noble man. He always steps up and does the right thing. But he's still kind of a bit of an by the way, he's so vocally dismissive of the town. And he's just constantly going like, oh, I'm rubbing my hands on this dirt water. He seems swaggering around the place all the time, going like, I can't wait to get out of this goddamn crap hole and be done with you people. I'm out of here. And everything keeps conspiring to hold him back. So my headcanon is like, when they're all in there voting later, they're just like, let's just really screw with this kid for all the credit. It's a perfectly nice town. why is he so dismissive of Bedford Falls? He's so horrible about it the whole time.
No, but it comes down to the fact that he thinks that he has something more to do in life, and what he needs to do is not there.
Though, but
you know.
That's all well and good. It's just the way he keeps talking about the town is a real kind of like, I'm getting out of this dump. Oh, my God, I'm not getting stuck here. Jesus Christ. Like, it's got such a kind of negative attitude about the perfectly nice town that, like, yeah, I'm headcanoning that all those people are like, I never heard him. He was calling the pharmacy like a crapple. So it's like, no, let's keep him here and just see knock this guy down a peg or two.
Right.
And let's see if he does it. Let's see if the high and mighty George Bailey will actually do it. And then they're like, oh, Christ, he actually stayed. No. And then like 30 years later, like, oh, sorry about that, George. Yeah. We didn't think you'd actually stick around.
That's right.
Yeah. Also, too, I have to point out, I do enjoy I've never seen this done in modern, like, office practice now. He's got the morning band on, which I'm sure you probably talked about already.
Nope. I was actually going to talk about that tomorrow, but we can talk about it today if you want.
David, if you got notes for tomorrow, then I don't want to step over you.
Yeah, we'll come back to that tomorrow. There is something I want to mention about the armband and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, right, so as the chairman is speaking, he's then interrupted by Potter, as you mentioned earlier, is the pseudo-head of the meeting, even though he's not the chairman. And he goes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get to my real purpose. And then one of the board members says, wait just a minute now. And Potter goes, wait for what? I claim this institution is not necessary to this town. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to dissolve this institution and turn its assets and liabilities over to the receiver. So, you know, we obviously can see that Potter has his motivations here. You know, he knew that he was coming to this meeting and this is what he was going to be doing.
Yeah. He's like, I didn't kill Peter Bailey for nothing. You
know? That's right. I didn't drive him to a stroke in order to have to wait 3 months for you to come to a decision.
You know, I think I also like the idea too that, like, as you're saying earlier, like, Potter doesn't even really, he's not really in this wheelchair, and his whole thing is just like he likes to put on extravagant displays of power. So once they sign over the buildings unknown to him, he's just gonna stand up as if he's like somehow getting power from absorbing another like local business. Is like, yes, now I add it to my collection.
That's right.
You'll be like you're freaking Skeletor getting, like, you know, the power of Grayskull finally getting to him or something. This huge golden crown disappears on his head, like, finally the Bailey building alone is mine. So then the whole that's why he hates George so much. He's like, I'm stuck. People think I'm in this wheelchair. Damn it, I can't backtrack out of it now. I gotta wait until I can do the big reveal, you know?
Correct. Now, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a business person. Are you a business person at all? Do you, like, understand the business concepts that he talks about here?
Oh, God, no. No. I mean, like, I have I remember having immense regret one time when I said to a friend of mine, like, oh, I love the film Wall Street, Michael Douglas, Charlie Sheen. But my thing is, like, I have no clue what's happening in that movie. Like, I just kind of get at the end, like, oh, Michael Douglas is bad. And then at the end, Charlie Sheen kind of screws him over and Michael Douglas starts to lose money somehow. And then this friend sat me down and tried to explain everything about Wall Street. And it was the most boring thing I've ever. He ruined the movie for me. Because I just so do not care about how this actually works and stuff. So no business talk. No, I do know people who have heads for it, who are proper, like,
right. No, I'm not a business person either. So I don't quite understand the whole thing. I had to actually look it up, what the whole thing is. Because, like, he says that, you know, and turn it over to the receiver. Right. So for me, when you hear a receiver, that's a football comment. You throw the ball and the guy catches it. You know, that's the whole idea. But the based on what I looked up, a receiver is someone who will who's able to run the company to maximize the value of all the assets and sell the company off or part of it in order to try to make some money over something that is being closed. They're basically supposed to, the company, whatever number, however much money they have in their accounts, and, you know, taking into account how much they have to pay for things. So that's, I guess, the assets and liabilities that they're talking about there. And then the whole idea is that, okay, you know, let's turn it over to some government official who's able to basically carve up the this institution and salvage what you can. You know, I guess that's more or less the idea that he talks about here.
Like I always find that kind of stuff like a little intimidating almost, because particularly now, because I just watch it, I'm like, I'm in my 30s. I still have this feels like very adult stuff, and I have no idea what's happening. It makes me, it infantilizes me a little bit, because I'm like, I still haven't a clue what the hell this is. Like, and I probably never will do. I'll never be a proper adult, because I just don't, I'm not interested in like sitting around boardrooms having to discuss like how to break up a business and who owns what. I was like, no, God damn it. It's like, this is just not for me, you know? But
That's right. And then Uncle Billy jumps up, and you can see he's really upset. And he goes, "Potter, you dirty, contemptible!" And then he turns to George and goes, "I'll wring his neck." And I'm like, okay, that's just, you know, he's in the room. I guess the idea is that you know, you don't want to say it directly to somebody.
I do one
You
thing I
know,
do
that
appreciate
he doesn't
about
want, he won't
the
get
AD
arrested. He
position.
won't get arrested for threatening him by saying, I'm going to wring your neck. So he says, I'm going to wring his neck.
I do enjoy though how consistently open about their utter contempt for Potter the Baileys are. Like throughout the whole movie, George just has this real, like, no matter if Potter, clearly everything Potter says to him is always very like fake smile, like, you know, just trying to like the niceties of society to be like, oh, you know, we can all be gentlemen here, George. And George always like barks back with like a, oh, go fuck yourself, you old piece of crap. He just hates him so much. And
Exactly.
I guess that's one thing, like George, honest to a fault. That's why that, you know, most people would, like if you were in a town you didn't like, you wouldn't go around going like, I can't wait that, you know, get out of this goddamn hellhole. But George can't do it. He can't be just like, you know, be polite, you know,
And he's
a little white
always
lie, like,
hated
no.
Potter. You know, even when he was a kid, he hated him. Yeah.
It's probably because he knows that he's just like, I know he's not, he doesn't need that wheelchair, and he's just trying to do, he's going to wait to do a big friggin' like, look, by finally destroying this business, it is revitalizing. He's going to whip off his bald cap and stuff and have long, like, Potter's only 35 years old in this scene. That's why George is so pissed. He's like, I know this, everything about this guy is a fake. He's either 35 years old or he's like an ancient evil that's existed for like thousands of
I
years.
think it goes more to the idea that he's an ancient evil, because, you know, the idea is that he's been, he doesn't look like he's aged at all in the, you know, 12 years since the first part of the movie took place, or sorry, in the nine years since the first part of the movie took place, and throughout the rest of the movie he still looks the same. You know, he doesn't age at all.
It's gonna be like people putting together like a history of Bedford Falls project, and they go like all like photos from like the 1830s, and in the background it's like, is that Potter? It's just like him still sitting there, the same look in his face. They still got the same butler guy is there beside him too.
Sorry, he must have made a deal with the devil at some point.
Yeah, he's just the Pennywise of
That's right.
Bedford.
Yeah, but Pennywise disappears for years along the way. You know, the,
Oh, yeah.
so.
Maybe that's why. Maybe it's because Potter doesn't hibernate. Yeah, that's why he's so old. Maybe if he went to bed for 27 years, he'd come out as a spry, lively clown guy with like balloons and stuff. But he's just so tired. He's like, I can't even be bothered to walk
That's
anymore,
right.
man. I'm just.
I'm just gonna float up the stairs, but other than that, I'm in a wheelchair. Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, to wring someone's neck is an idiom that basically means that you're just very angry with somebody, which obviously makes a lot of sense for this whole thing. And then as Uncle Billy continues talking, he goes, "George, did you hear what that buzzard?" Now, I like the fact that he calls him a buzzard. You know, because usually, I mean, what would you think if you're calling someone a buzzard? What do you think that theoretically means?
Well, I mean, like I think, and I know that in this context, I guess what he's saying is that, like, you know, instead of it just being like, well, a buzzard's a big, ugly bird, so it's kind of insulting in saying that he's ugly. But also just the idea of something picking at the dead
That's right.
is like literally like circling overhead, waiting until the thing's completely down, and then coming in and making your move. So it's just like, yeah, in Billy's mind, like, the business is done, basically. But he's just like, yeah, Potter's been waiting here for this moment, and just, like, going to go over, and is borderline calling him, like, a grave robber, in a way.
Right. No, I look at it, and, you know, the idea of calling him a buzzard, as you said, he's there to pick up the pieces, pick up the dead pieces, and deal with it. But, I mean, also, the definition of a buzzard is a person who is either very lame or, it says, or whack. I don't really know what that reference really means. But the idea is that it's saying very lame.
That's very modern terminology, whack.
That's right.
Like, that's proper. Well, I say it's not modern. It's like, it's about 20 years old now.
Right.
But, like, yeah, so I'm saying someone's whack is just like, yeah, saying that they're bad. Like, this, yeah, that's whack.
Right. You know? No, but I think it goes to the point that maybe they're saying that a buzzard is a lame type of creature, because what it does is it just waits and feeds off the things that are straying at the end, what's left, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah,
I think that's the whole idea here of what he's trying to say. And then one of the other board members goes, "Mr. Chairman, it's too soon after Peter Bailey's death to talk about chloroforming the building alone." So again, the idea of saying chloroforming. So, you know, before they're talking about, you know, sending it to receivership and picking it apart and stuff like that. Now someone's just referring to putting it to sleep. The whole idea of chloroform is that you put someone to sleep for a certain amount of time. You know, it's not you're not trying to kill something. You're just, I guess, putting someone to sleep, and then they're going to wake up and they can continue. So it's just very, very strange terminology to use that. And then we get all of these people, these businessmen start chatting, blah, 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 blah. And then we get to hear, "Peter Bailey died 3 months ago. I second Mr. Potter's motion." So, you know, here's someone else who's basically saying, why did we have to wait 3 months for this type of thing? Let's just get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of you know, you have someone who makes a motion, and as long as someone else agrees with it, then you can continue, and then you have to have a vote on that motion. You know, that's the way that the process of handling motions is, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Because, again, it's so heartless, though, in that as well. Like, again, it's only been...
No, but it's been 3 months.
And also...
What has been... You know, has the building alone been working properly over the last 3 months? They don't even discuss that. They don't say whether, okay, Peter Bailey's not here, so things have been running to the ground over the last 3 months, or Peter Bailey is not here, but everything's great over the last 3 months. I mean, they keep that very ambiguous.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, it's just a little rough, too, like, in considering, like, to have to potentially say to these people, like, yeah, so, you know, your father and brother is dead. And also now your business might be like kaput as well. It's kind of like, it's an extra, you know, I can understand wanting to wait to be like, okay, so now I have to also break this thing to you that, like, you know, this business might not be able to continue. But in the, you know, the whole movie is basically about how capitalism destroys you. So it's a tough, harsh mistress. So, yeah, I can imagine, like, business-minded men just been like, just tear the Band-Aid off. Like, yeah, he's dead. The business is gone. Why are we waiting around to talk about it? Just get – reality check, man. Just, you know, knock yourself into the real world here.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's the way that this whole thing goes. And then the chairman turns to everyone and goes, "Very well, in that case, I'll ask the two executive officers to withdraw. But before you go – I'm sure the whole board wishes to express its deep sorrow at the passing of Peter Bailey." So once again, it's been 3 months. You know, we're still going to say it, you know, over and over.
Yeah. I guess, you know, maybe because it's a formal meeting, though. It's just one of these things that it's like, okay, so we just all have to, you know, just it's a formality of going, like, now we're having to officially talk about it. I guess once again, even though we've said it like five times,
that's right,
over the last 3 months.
We're about to close about to close you down, but we are very, very grateful and express our sorrow over everything that happened here. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And
I guess if George and Billy weren't there, I'd imagine they'd be like, we're not going to say
that's
it.
Right.
Like, it's just because, like, oh, his family's here, so we better say it.
That's
just,
right.
Just to make sure. I mean, they think that we care.
You right.
Know, that kind of thing.
And then George goes, thank you very much. And then the chairman continues and goes, it was his faith and devotion that are responsible for this organization. So by saying that statement, he basically says that, okay, Peter Bailey is the building and loan, nobody else. You know, without Peter Bailey, this wouldn't have happened, which is somewhat besmirching to Billy, you know, but okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, Billy doesn't have the, like, as the movie goes on,
he doesn't have he's
still a lot of confidence in you.
That's anyway. Right.
So it's like, oh okay. Then I guess.
Exactly.
And that's okay. He can get another job. He's only 55.
That's right.
You know, we'll get there.
Yes. And then Potter goes, I'll go further than that. I'll say that to the public, Peter Bailey was the building and loan. So what Potter is essentially saying here is that if Peter Bailey is not around, there's no need for the building and loan. People aren't gonna think to come here if Peter Bailey's not around.
Yeah.
You know, and then Billy jumps up and says, that's fine, Potter. And then he gets cut off because the minute ends. You know, so it's we're leaving things at a very tense moment where there actually is a little bit of argument between them.
So people arguing with Potter. I mean, that's wildly unorthodox.
That's right. But, well, it's only the Baileys. Nobody else. There is nobody else here that is agreeing with Potter, that is willing to go up against Potter. Yeah. So who knows? That's pretty much all I have to say about this minute. You have anything else you want to say about the minute now?
No, nothing about this minute that can't be said for other minutes as well.
That's true. Also, every Monday we have a segment called Capra Monday, where my guests will give their top five Frank Capra movies. Start from number five and work your way up now.
Yeah. as well as looking into his IMDb, he's like, oh my god, he made so many films like this guy as well. But I think, yeah, my top five would be, so you want to go from the bottom up, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going. I'll go for Lost Horizon. I remember watching that during university, and I get really enjoying it, to be fair. But it's the movie I just remember the being like, oh yeah, there's like a plane crash and stuff in it. And nothing else about it really stuck with me. So I sort of put that in. I was like, yeah, all of them. Yeah, Lost Horizon. No, I'll put that in there. Then Arsenic and Old Lace. Obviously, classic. You know, absolutely love it. The only problem with it is that it's so, like, howlingly, like, obviously based on a play. Like, it's just so, like, yeah, this is basically you just put the camera down and just let the play out. Like, that's, you know, it's so stagey and stuff. That, you know, nowadays you're adapting things to film, you kind of tend to like, well, you want to not give out that vibe. But, you know, obviously back in like whatever it was, like 46 or whenever it was made, it was, you know, they probably weren't thinking about things like that. There was like, oh, you literally just film the play. After that, then I put probably Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Okay.
It's, yeah, this great film. I have no beef with Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Just like, I think I once did pitch a Movies by Menace project based around Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, but it was just to try to create the longest ever episode. So it was basically someone filibustering about 1 minute of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington for like 12 hours if they possibly could, and just bringing in new guests every once in a while and just been like, we're still here. We're still talking about minute 14 or whatever. But sadly, that project never came.
I thought you were going to get like Batman to join in on it or something.
That's the thing, you can go crazy with it, but then it's just like, it'll become like an art installation. It's like, well, who's going to actually sit and watch the whole damn
thing? Right.
Or listen to the whole ethic. I know you gotta know one or two people who probably be like, no, I'm dedicated. I have to listen to the whole thing. But I don't know if you end up having to split it up, and then that would defy the point of the project then. And then from that, I would go, let's see, what did I have down as, oh yeah, It Happened One Night, which is like, yep, I know that was that the first of the big Oscar sweeps?
Yep, it was the very first.
Yeah. The very first one, and you know, deservedly, because you watch that film, it's like, yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. I absolutely love that film. And then, yeah, I actually would put this as like this is like the Frank Capra movie. It's a Wonderful Life is the top, to be fair. It's kind of the one, like, it's, you know, synonymous with his name. If you think of the term Capra-esque, it's usually what you're thinking of is a Wonderful Life. It was a movie I hadn't seen until I was like in my late teens. It's not as prevalent over here as I think it is in the US. It had so much more of a reputation. But it's one that, multiple viewings I appreciate more, particularly as you get older too. Like when you watch it, watching it in my teens, I was like, it's good. Like, it's okay. Yeah. And then as you go through life and life hits you in the balls a couple of times, and then you get to, like, I think I'm the same age as Jimmy Stewart when he made the movie. So, like, actually watching it this time, I was like, oh yeah, this guy's like literally my age, I think, or maybe he might be like a year or two older than me. But it's like, it felt so much more like, oh no, now I get this much, much more than I had previously. So, and yeah, I think it's an excellent film. So that'll be my five Capras.
All right, very cool. Thank you very much for that. So now you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, the main show you can find me on is Bat Minute, which is a project I do with my friend John Parker. We've been going for like 6 years now. We break down and talk about the Batman films 1 minute at a time. We've gone through the live-action movies from 1989 up to 97. So that's, you know, ending at Batman and Robin. And then we'll hop back in time. We just finished a season on Mask of the Phantasm, the 1993 animated movie. We have a great time over there. We're just, you know, getting all sorts of guests. We've been going, we have delved deep, deep into Batman lore at this point. I'm very proud of that show. So if anyone wants to hear me nattering on excessively about Batman and many, many other things, because we do go on tangents, you can find us on at Bat Minutes and on all social medias. If you just type in Bat Minutes, we will be the thing that pops up.
All right, very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, until tomorrow, hot dog!
Hot dog!
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.